Welcome back to another episode of Trigger. This is episode 618, August 19th, 2026. I'm Corian Ganimard, here with Matt Vespa as always. What's going on, Matt?
Nothing. Just your typical Wednesday.
Typical Wednesday. Well, Wednesday after a primary election night. Did you stay up late to watch some of the results last night?
No. You know why? Because Florida is exceptional at getting their shit done in a timely manner. There were no USB sticks that were lying around. And no servers, you know, going down. Steve Kornacki, you know, didn't have to have the surrender cobra, you know, and a meltdown going over, you know, the coverage because it was late and all that. So,
we knew the reason.
Even in Alaska, which closed at what, like 10 p.m. here?
And they're all from remote areas and they have to, count these ballots.
I mean, 35% in, but still, you know, because they're, you know, it's a top four primary, we knew that Mary Peltola and Dan Sullivan and the other fake Dan Sullivan
were probably, we'll get into that later for sure.
Yeah, there's gonna be an investigation to that, so, you know, we kind of knew it wasn't a show. Funny how, like, the red states can get their done and, you know, we can all go to bed in a timely manner.
But out in LA, one city, not even the full state, takes him 2 or 3 weeks for Spencer Pratt to know he's not a
fucking month. It's just ridiculous. And in Wisconsin, it took, you know, what, until like 3-4 in the morning until we figured out, like, you know, when it was settled.
Yeah.
That was also due to mass polling errors, though. I mean, everyone thought this was going to be a double-digit win for Abdullah Saeed or whatever the fuck his name is. And ended up being a, you know, a fun primary to watch, except for the whole, you know, the whole servers going down and goddamn USB sticks being blank and all that. So
yeah, and one of the reasons why we knew the election results in Florida pretty quickly last night is that they weren't very close. Byron Donalds ran away with the gubernatorial primary in the Republican Party. He took about 48%. Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, a DeSantis ally, even though DeSantis decided not to endorse in this race, probably because he knew Byron Donalds would win. Jay Collins took 25%, and then James Fishbeck, you know, he's popular among young college kids who hate Israel.
Did he break double digits, man?
He did. He just over 10%. May have overperformed. I mean, he was claiming he was going to be close to winning. So,
well, I got all these people saying that we're going to shock the world tomorrow, and then I'm like, no.
Yeah, no. And it's just a reminder for those of you listening, and you and me, Vespa. Most voters are not terminally online. Most voters don't give a about, you know, what kind of fights are happening among Republican candidates online. It's just so online.
Go outside and touch some grass, guys. You know, Twitter is not real life. Don't fall into the Democrat trap, man. I mean, 2024, they kind of fell into that. You know, we got Beyonce. Look at the engagement, and then you just get absolutely, you know, a sledgehammer.
Yeah, look at Megan Thee Stallion twerking on stage. Yeah. There's no way we could lose. When actually, I think that was actually a pivotal moment in the election. It was kind of traumatizing for most normal older Republicans or independents. Be like, what the heck is going on right now?
And also for the people in the f-ing stands, man. Like a third of that auditorium was headed for the exits after the. They weren't. It's like, what the, you know, it was just bad. It was just a weird campaign.
Just offensive all around.
She blew $1 billion in like what 108 f-ing days. I mean, it's just it's whatever. But yes. You know, it was a good day for Republicans. It showed that the DSA, you know, the far left momentum crashed brutally in Florida.
Well, hold on a second here. A DSA member is actually the nominee now to...
for one, but most of all, like Jared Moskowitz won, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a little... I mean, Vinden was just a terrible candidate, though. I think that also...
Well, this is actually the biggest story of the night, in my opinion. I mean, yes, Byron Donalds won, and it's great, and I think he wants to eliminate.
Like, I agree. Like, we knew that like eight months ago that he was going to win.
Exactly. So the story of the night is really what happened in Florida on the Democrat side. They had this guy, the extreme establishment, Alexander Vindman. You remember him, obviously. He was the stooge who kept pushing the Ukraine impeachment hoax and how Donald Trump placed an inappropriate phone call and he was the big whistleblower. And this was like a huge deal at the time. And he was the most anti-Trump person that existed over, I mean, certainly that news cycle. And he continued to be for years. He was backed by Chuck Schumer. He spent $16 million in this race against his opponent, who ended up winning. What the hell's her name? Angie Nixon. Angie Nixon spent about $1 million. So she's like outspent 16 to 1. Nobody's expected this woman to actually defeat Alex Vindman. And it's a crush to Chuck Schumer and the establishment and Hakeem Jeffries. This is a statewide race. There was tons of votes cast last night. And she is actually headed to a massive defeat against Ashley Moody. It's not even going to be close.
Plus 35, I think.
Probably. I mean, Florida.
Probably a 30-point win for her. I mean, this is just, and it's not like, it's kind of like, like Haley Stevens and AES, right? It's not like that. This was like a slim win.
Who's AES? AES?
Abdullah Saeed.
Yeah, you got to say his name. But you should really say it, like a Middle Eastern.
I can't pronounce his real name, though. There's too much.
Abdulrahman Muhammad El-Sayed. Yeah,
something 9/11 hijack or something. Anyway.
Same thing.
It's not like this, like that was a squeaker. This was really decided with like 40% in. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, I was getting texts from people from down there. Like, they're like, oh my God, this could be an upset. And then, she absolutely cut Vindman's balls off.
She smoked him. The last
50% of the vote, it was like 56-44.
Exactly.
And I'm just like, Jesus. And apparently he laughed, when you mentioned her name. He thought he was going to.
He was a shoo-in.
That election night party over there at the Vindman camp, everybody just looked gutted. Like, what the f*** happened? It's like, dude, you guys suck. Also, Nate Silver had a good tweet, man, about Dan Goldman losing, although that was a lot of because New York is full with anti-Semites now. But George Conway in the bed in his congressional primary, and now this. I think people are tired of the OG anti-Trump resistance crew. We're done. I think Democrats are done. I think progressives don't care. Obviously, I mean, Dan Goldman was the f-ing lawyer for the impeachment.
Totally. So, their whole policies was just whatever Trump was, I am against. And you think that's just wearing thin with voters now? Like, you have to present something that they want other than I'm not Trump. And this could be very interesting heading into the midterms in 2028, because that's been their whole rallying cry. I'm not Trump, and I'm going to do everything I can to defeat him. Democrats are craving something more, I would argue, even crazier. They want to defund the police.
Medicare for all, cut off all aid in Israel. Jews are evil. Yeah, it's bad.
Abolish ICE, and that's where the energy is right now. Like, it's not just stopping Trump. It's like upend America as we know it. Upend democracies and capitalism as we know it. This is a terrifying party. And Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer's are trying the best they can to thread this needle of somehow welcoming them to this big tent. Meanwhile, they're the ones who want to destroy this big tent. They want nothing to do with this big tent. They want Chuck Schumer gone and Hakeem Jeffries.
That's the point. I mean, they have no leadership. So, Jeffries is not a lock to be the leader of the House Dems next year. Schumer's definitely going to get primaried at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, it's not enough to be that. And they don't have the money to defend their, Democrats that are quote unquote quality. So it's not enough to be the anti-people. Again, this is nothing new, man. I mean, we're going back to, 2004 here. I mean, John Kerry was the anti-Bush candidate. Mitt Romney was the anti-Obama, and like that was it. And both those guys lost. So might have a lot of energy, might have a lot of fervor, might have a lot of noise, but you gotta like do something. And Vindman kind of was just this awkward guy. I mean, I'm sorry. It's just he moved there 3 years before. I think people are just like, f*** this guy.
Yeah, they're tired of him. And it's someone who took a victory.
And if people don't remember, Angie Nixon was the one who had a total meltdown on the state house floor when the new maps passed. She got arrested. for trying to do a sit-in in Governor DeSantis's office, and I think she had some cockamamie resolution about Gaza, which even her own party was like, can you please pull this shit? Like, you don't want to be on record for this, and it went down like 104-2. So
she's a complete crazy lady. She's
absolutely whacked. So I mean, talk about Noah Rothman on CNN last night, National Review, was like, this basically was a sacrifice. Like, this could have been a potentially competitive Senate race, and they decided to just Democrats decided to just say like, so
yeah, and
not saying that I don't think Vindman would have won either if he had won this primary. I think Ashley Moody still would have beaten him, but no time defining her, Angie Nixon in her election victory speech. I mean, that was fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
get off the time running.
Yeah, it's she's a complete nut job, and Democrats have no chance in the state of Florida. But given that this is a statewide race, it might even suppress voters of the moderate, if we can even use that term anymore to describe any Democrats, from even showing up to the polls anymore. Because, this lady is a nut job. I mean, take a listen to this. This is her on the campaign trail talking about drag shows.
I understand, like, there's no sexualization at a drag show. It's just people dressing up and singing and performing. I've taken my children to drag shows, and it's fun. It's entertainment. It's wholesome entertainment. Yes. And there's nothing wrong. It's just, like, I don't get it.
She don't get it. She don't understand that there's anything weird about bringing a kid to a drag show, and that it's not sexualization of anything.
But it's for adults, man. Like, again, I don't understand. Whatever.
Here's another example.
We don't need to get into it, but we don't.
And by the way, that was on a podcast show during the campaign. And notice the way she talks. The host of that show was a black woman. Notice she's talking to Jen Psaki last night about some of her positions. Her tone is entirely different. Like, she's a whole different person. Jen Psaki asked Nixon how she's going to engage with Cuban voters in Florida, because obviously there's a huge Cuban population in Florida. They hate Fidel Castro. They fled communism. They fled socialism. And this woman is just a member of the DSA proudly. Just last week, we saw the DSA commemorate what would have been the 100th birthday of Fidel Castro and praise him for all of his accomplishments. I'd be surprised if Angie Nixon polled 0.5% in the Cuban community. But here's how she answered that when asked, how are you going to win over Cuban voters?
You have incredible background. We've just talked about in the block.
No, she doesn't.
Block before this, where people are getting to know you. And running statewide in Florida is no easy task, as you know. So that's why I'm asking these questions. One of the, you are a member of the Democratic Socialists. There are a lot of candidates who have won in primaries who are members of the Democratic Socialists as well. You are also running, though, in a state Florida has, as you well know, and a lot of people watching know, a large population of people who fled countries like Cuba and Venezuela, who may have a very unfavorable view of the term socialist, and they may not know you yet. So what is your message to them, and how are you going to appeal to them? Because you need to win them over, too.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to continue to work hard and go and knock on every door and have conversations with people, even if they may not agree with me ideologically. I want to be clear. I just recently joined the Democratic Socialists of America.
So she just recently joined. So therefore, she doesn't embrace any of all of their policies. Oh, I'm just new here. No, I'm the new girl.
But I'm also a union organizer.
Go ahead, Vespa.
I love how she doesn't answer the question.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I mean, you just like, come on.
And she doesn't. Here, she continues. She never answers the question.
I'm a mother. I am a wife. I am a community organizer, a small business owner. And I'm going to have conversations with people about what it is that they care about.
Okay, so that's really cool. I'm glad you're a mother and you care about having conversations with people. That doesn't answer the question how the hell you're going to disavow communism, socialism, when you're running on that party platform.
There are people that are great at saying a lot and not answering the question, and it goes, they can hit the crease, right? And they can pivot like that.
Yeah.
I have beware of these people. She does not have that at all.
She absolutely does not. So she's going to be going down in flames. She did, as we talked about, take down Alex Vindman. Donald Trump took a victory lap this morning on his Truth Social, he said, "The most gratifying loss last night was that of the treasonous creep Alexander Vindman to the radical left lunatic who can't speak or think properly." Yeah, that's true. We just learned that. I didn't see that. "And who will go down to certain defeat at the hands of Ashley Moody, a truly fantastic senator from the great state of Florida." Vindman, if you remember, was the one who lied about my perfect call with Zelensky of Ukraine, only to find out that the conversation was routinely recorded and proved that I was 100% correct. Yeah, so bye-bye Vindman, bye-bye all these anti-Trumpers who can't offer anything other than anti-Trump, and hello to the crazy party who, again, wants to defund police, eliminate borders, abolish ICE, Medicare for All. It's just unbelievable. So she's going to go down in flames. Last night we saw Corey Mills go down in flames. That's probably a good thing. A lot of credible allegations of his sexual misconduct. Many people didn't think that he would be able to win in a general election. So that is a nightmare we don't have to worry about. Oh, another fun one last night, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She's running for Florida's 20th congressional district. After the redistricting that took place in Florida when Ron DeSantis and the state legislator enacted the new maps, it eliminated race-based districting. So this new district was formerly held by Congresswomen Alcee Hastings or Sheila Sherfillis McCormick. It's been held by a black representative for the past 30 years.
I mean, it is the majority. It's like a plurality black, man. I mean, it pretty much is a black district.
Yeah, I think it's 49% black, and then there's a whole bunch of Hispanics.
Why they were pissed that she was there.
Yeah.
She started this war.
And the whole point of this, this is not fair, getting rid of race-based gerrymandering, that's just not fair. It's going to eliminate all the black people serving in office. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the same party as the party who's saying that this wouldn't be fair, decided not to give her seat up for a black representative. So they don't practice what they preach. If she wins, it'll be the first time that the seat was not held by a black representative in over 30 years. Yeah.
I'm not even following that, man. Like, she's been saying that she's been getting these endorsements from groups, and they're like, no, we haven't endorsed you. Like, it was kind of, her endorsement page was actually removed from her campaign site. So it kind of looked like a circus, but she survived.
She doesn't practice what she preached. She could have easily have backed out and endorsed some, actually, the guy who came in second place, he's a rapper. I forget his name, to be honest. We talked about this on Larry's show this morning. He was a rapper. He would have been a great representative. But not so much for Debbie. What the hell's going on in Alaska, Vespa? So you got the Democrat Mary Peralta. They do this stupid ranked choice voting type of thing.
Yeah. So yeah. It's also top four, right? So like the top four vote getters, make it to the general. Mm-hmm. And then there's all ranked choice. Yeah, there's ranked choice voting there too. It's bizarre. Frankly, it's how Lisa Murkowski has been able to survive all these years. That's not really the story. The story is what is going on with Mary Peralta's campaign, because about 48 hours before primary day, she nukes her whole campaign.
Yeah.
Top staffers are gone. Saturday night massacre. I'm talking people. I mean, I'm hearing rumors of the campaign is in chaos. Dan Sullivan released an internal poll showing that her unfavorables are now higher than her favorables. I mean, plus 10 in like a month or something. What is going on? I don't know. Alaska Landmine actually had this story first, and before some people kind of roll their eyes at local blogs, the New York Times reporters confirmed it. They're like, yeah, it's true, the chief of staff is gone, people that have been with her since her congressional run and days in the House are gone. So either something's off or she feels that there's a ceiling and she doesn't trust it. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's weird. So the Democrats
campaigns don't do this, man. Campaigns that that are confident don't do this. I mean, she's probably one of the few Democrats that you can label under the solid category, right? I would even put Roy Cooper in there, in North Carolina. These are good quality Democrats to run statewide. She has won before. So this is a really interesting move.
Yeah, and so what are Democrats turning towards? They're trying to cheat the system by running some guy who has the exact same first and last name as the Republican incumbent senator, Dan Sullivan. So Dan Sullivan is the current Republican representative in the Senate in Alaska. Democrats recruited some guy named Daniel J. Sullivan. They have a different middle initial. He's pretending to be a Republican, gets on the ballot, and the top four people advance. So right now, you got Mary Pattola, Dan Sullivan, the incumbent, and then for third place, you have Dan Sullivan, the imposter, and a guy named David Leslie coming in fourth place. So as of now, you're going to have two Dan Sullivans in the general election ballot. It's going to confuse a lot of voters. They certainly need to do their research, and there's a lot of legal battles going on right now. But as of now, both Dan Sullivans will be on the ballot, and I'm a bit worried about Alaska. We better get that figured out before November. It's absolutely insane. So,
well, I mean, at least the DOJ is looking into it. So,
Well, something better be resolved, because that is, Alaska's a tricky, it's a weird state.
It is a weird state. And hey, I mean, I know this is not, I just wanted to mention this since we're talking about weird election stuff. Did I hear that, what was the polling firm that said that their was fake?
Oh, yeah.
Experiment?
I forget the name of it offhand, but
was that Michigan? It was Hong. Yeah, they gave a whole bunch of fake about Francesca Hong leading by like double digits, and then they shut it down after the primary and said, "Gotcha." Essentially,
that was Hong up 23 points. They also had a poll that had
El
Saida.
Yeah, let's take it easier, right? I mean, even on face value, 23 points. Let's calm the down. Ahead. Okay, whatever. 23, but still. The fact that they did this, I think there should be an investigation.
Totally. They're trying to influence people showing up to the polls or not.
Seriously. I mean, like, that got people jacked up to the tits. Things moved based on that. I think that there needs to be some sort of investigation. That's ridiculous.
Totally.
I mean, that's almost as bad. Whatever. I mean, I can't. There are no words to describe.
It forces money back into the race.
I'm not a Hong supporter, but, like, if you were a member of that campaign – or a Hong supporter, and that f***ing came out, it's like, I think every voter in Wisconsin should be like, what the f*** are you doing here?
Yeah, some people might not show up to the polls, it's in the bag already. It's not, it doesn't matter if they vote or not.
It's funny how all this election interference doesn't happen, and then like this f*** happens to the Democratic gubernatorial primary now. It should be appropriate.
Totally. So don't believe the polls at all, obviously. Show up to vote no matter what the polls
especially are saying. Especially in August, man. I mean, that, everybody's in summer mode. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, you know.
Yeah. Won't answer their phone. Doesn't matter. Not paying attention. It's really after Labor Day when these things will start getting closer. And
people start to lock back in because, you know, the summer vibes are done.
So. And the polling companies need to cover their asses, so they can't be off way that off because they'll never be in business the following 2 years.
I mean, it's
so.
Been bad this year, man. I mean, bad. Major whiffs. Like, and I think they're oversampling. I think they're doing too many damn surveys. Like, I know they're getting paid to do them, so, like, you know, it's their business, but campaigns also need to, like, calm down.
Yeah.
July, August, nobody really is, like, locked in. So, anyway. Totally. Sorry.
Someone else who needs to calm down a little bit is John Ossoff down in Georgia. Completely unimpressive guy. He's starting to try to mimic Barack Obama in so much as, like, changing his diction, his pauses when he talks. The left thinks that this guy is the next president in 2028 or 2032. He's from a southern state in Georgia, obviously a swing state that's important for either party to win, but they're really trying to promote the hell out of this guy, and maybe his popularity is getting to his head a little bit. He threw out this vulgar insinuation this past weekend at a campaign rally, basically accusing Natalie Harp, Donald Trump's closest aide, to having an inappropriate, likely sexual relationship with the president. It was really disgusting. I'll play the audio right here, and we'll react on the other side. Mm-hmm. Take a listen.
And while the sailors on the Lincoln fight his war, while he fruitlessly drains our munitions and oil reserves, the president sleeps through his meetings. He golfs and trades stocks. See, he doesn't want to do the job. He wants to build his ballroom and travel with Natalie on their apparently defenseless flying palace gifted by the Emir of Qatar.
Completely uncalled for, out of bounds, Don Ossoff is trying to play this off as if he's attacking Donald Trump. But what he is obviously doing is attacking a young girl. I think she's 27 years old, works her ass off, a bone cancer survivor who credits Donald Trump for saving her life with the Right to Try Act. And she's just a political pawn of John Ossoff. If you're this poor girl's father, mother, like, what the hell did this poor girl do to be accused of? And you know what he's doing here, having an inappropriate sexual relationship with the president. You know, there were many people on this that flight that Donald Trump took out of Turkey, not just Natalie. He flew with multiple people. Why'd you single her out? It's a disgusting sexist attack. He's trying to play it off like it's no big deal. We talked about it this morning and last night, Vespa, but there was the most unhinged, ridiculous interview last night that took place on CNN with Erin Burnett. And I was watching last night's election results on CNN. I usually don't watch that network, but I think they have better maps than Fox News. I think John King's actually pretty good with the maps. So I was like, okay, let's see what's going on CNN. And the whole, I would say, first 10 minutes, it was breaking news how Natalie Harp one time rode in the back of an SUV trunk. They called it a trunk. And, you know, these SUVs, which are Suburbans in Donald Trump's motorcade, there's no such thing as a trunk to a suburb. We've all ridden around in the back of one of those before. Even Secret Service does regularly. Some of them have seats. But they're thinking this is some breaking news that Natalie Harp is in such love. They didn't say this, but they're insinuating with Donald Trump that she jumped in the trunk of a car to ride with him. It's not a story. It doesn't matter. But they're trying to play this as breaking news to slander this girl and really make a story where there absolutely is nothing. So I spent the first 10 minutes talking about this breaking revelation. And then later in the show, and I'm telling you, it's probably an hour show. I'd say 25 minutes, nearly half of it was dedicated to Natalie Harp. They brought on her estranged brother, who she hasn't talked to since they were children, to slander her as well. So she's not only is she just breaking up this family, she's adding fuel to the fire. And it went terribly. It went absolutely terribly. Here's how she started the breaking news story about Natalie Harp riding in the trunk of the motorcade.
And what more are you learning about Natalie Harp tonight? I understand you've got a very specific story here that sheds some light on this very important staffer.
Well, it just shows you how much she cares about President Trump and how she wants to be in proximity to him. This was back in 2023 when President Trump was in court in New York, and he was going down to head to the courthouse, and the motorcade was waiting outside of Trump Tower when staffers realized that there weren't enough seats for Natalie Harp. They hadn't accounted that she would be going down to the courthouse, and she was told that. Now, a screaming match then ensued in the lobby of Trump Tower at that time, with essentially Harp saying that the president had personally asked her to go, and she was determined, so determined to not be left behind, that she actually got in the trunk of one of the SUVs that was part of the motorcade and sat there. It's almost like a cargo hold, and that was according to multiple sources.
Multiple sources confirm this. Like, it's a, like, we have to double check.
Hold on, Corey. What SUV has a trunk?
There is no such thing as an SUV with a trunk, and the motorcade that brings the president around, they're all Suburbans or Chevys or whatever the hell they are. But there's not a thing, Vespa.
That's ridiculous.
This is the stupidest non-scandal I remember since I don't know the last one. I don't know. Well, Cash Patel snorkeling at the U.S. Arizona.
They're trying to do a nastier, you know, grabbing by the pussy type thing.
Totally.
You know, called Epstein thing. They're trying to do everything to try to drive this guy's approval numbers down. And, you know, it's just Democrats already hate the guy. I don't understand what the fuck's going on. It's just, there's no story here. I just don't.
The story is how disgraceful Erin Burnett is.
Like you said, it's just like the president has aides, you know, like top aides that follow him everywhere. Like, when, okay, that's every president ever.
Yeah, who
They're
the hell
body
cares?
People, for f- sake. They're always with the president. Yeah. So, So I just don't.
Erin thinks she's on to something here. So she brings the estranged brother in, who's got great hair, by the way. It's down past his shoulders. He looks like a real stoner. He sounds like a stoner. He's actually wearing a hat in this interview, and it says Bud on it. No, not Budweiser, not the drink, the other kind of Bud. Here's the big gotcha moment here. We're unveiling the big brother, and here's how that interview went. I knew it was a disaster from the very start.
Trump. How much do you think she truly believed that Trump saved her life?
Well, that's an interesting question. But if she thinks about it, what he did was he made experimental drugs legal to try, and that insurance would pay for it. So it's not like he like physically saved her life, you know? It's kind of different. Like, it's like Donald Trump didn't pay his own money to save my sister's life. So it really just depends how you look at it. You know what I mean?
Oh, she's dead to rights now. Brother really got him. Now she asks, what drew your sister to Trump?
You guys grew up in the same home, the same family. So you understand where she's coming from in a way that no one else does.
Yeah.
What do you think drew her to him?
Well, my mom raised us with the idea that American exceptionalism was the correct way of looking at things.
Mom sounds like a patriot.
That the United States is the boss of the world, that, like, you know, slavery was back then, that was normal. People weren't bad because they had slaves. And honestly, and it's like Trump wants to take all those books out of schools. He wants to rewrite history. And so, like, I think that my sister, unfortunately, didn't break out of that delusion that my mom raised us with. And Trump is like everything that my mom taught us to respect. So I think that's where her infatuation for Trump comes from, honestly. Because I don't think it's a physical attraction. Let's get real, you know? Like, personally, I don't think so.
Okay. I mean, I don't even know how to react to this. The mother says we're the greatest country in the world, and that's why Natalie Harp is apparently hooking up with the president, as Erin Burnett is insinuating. There's so many clips of this. They're all ridiculous, but I'll play this last one. You know, she's trying to, you know, be all super serious and, you know, just asking the really tough questions here. And she's got the low voice saying, you know, this is so, I know it's a sensitive topic, but it's something we have to address. If you were talking to Natalie today, what would you tell her?
Now, look, I've been emphasizing here, obviously, you know her in a way that no one else does as her brother, but you are obviously estranged from her at this time. But, you know, we see those pictures of you all as children and your family. If she was listening to you right now, is there anything you'd want to tell her?
Yeah, I love you. I hope that you change and that you wake up and you realize that everybody on this earth is part of a human family, and no country is better than any other country.
That's not true.
And the history of the United States is unfortunately really sad, and it shouldn't be rewritten. We got to all come together and try to make it better.
Well, I really appreciate your time and taking the time to talk to us.
Absolutely shameless, disgusting interview, disgusting slander. There's not even too much more to say about that, Vespa, but, like, unbelievable. I was without words watching this last night. And that's why CNN has no viewers, and I highly recommend you don't watch it. But
yeah, I just don't, I can't, like, let's devote 10 minutes to the estranged brother. I don't.
Let's tear the family apart, too.
How that got greenlit is, frankly, I mean, not really baffling, but any other place would have fired that person, so.
Totally. And the producers.
Story. Like, what the fuck is this? I just don't know.
The producers who booked him are dead set on breaking up this family. They're obviously going through a lot already. They're estranged. There's no more relationship. It seems like Natalie is came out on top of this one. I can see why they're estranged. But CNN is a scumbag news organization, and they certainly proved it again last night. Another scumbag organization is the AP. Did you see how they reported yesterday's news that Scott Bessent, the potential assassin, if you remember a couple months back, he announced to a room of where he was giving a speech that he survived an assassination attempt. This guy His name is Ryan Michael English. Yesterday, he was sentenced to 6 years in prison for attempting to kill Scott Bessent. The day that Scott Bessent was sworn in, this guy drove from Massachusetts to the U.S. Capitol. He had guns on him and weapons, knives, and he ended up turning himself in. He said his goal today was to assassinate Scott Bessent. This is a guy. Here's how the AP reported it yesterday. Woman accused of plotting to kill Secretary Scott Bessent is sentenced to 6 years in prison. They call him a woman because this guy is a tranny. He identifies as a woman and he wears a dress. The article goes on to say, a Massachusetts woman who told police that she brought homemade firebombs to the U.S. Capitol to kill Secretary Scott Bessent was sentenced on Tuesday to just over 6 years in prison. Then they use his chosen name, Riley English, a 26-year-old transgender woman, said she was in the grips of a mental health crisis and abusing drugs when she drove to Washington. It goes on and on and on using the absolute incorrect pronouns. If my grandma was reading this, or anybody who's not plugged into all of the news, they'd actually think that this was a woman. They'd be like, oh, we have a woman killer, attempted killer. That's crazy. No, it's unbelievable how they can just pass this off as a fact that this guy, they don't even address the fact that this is not a guy, went to go kill Scott Bessent. It's sick. And in court, the judge actually called this person Miss English. So it's absolutely sick. But this guy's going to get 6 years in prison. I'm surprised it's not more than that. And he deserves to rot there. For only 6 years, unfortunately. It should be a lot longer. Let's leave with one more story, Vespa. You see that Abdul... what's his full name? Abdul Rahman Mohammed El Said, his mother... Do you know she worked for a designated terror group that supported Hamas and Osama bin Laden?
Yeah, I heard.
It's crazy.
Paperwork.
Yeah, Amy wrote about this morning on Town Hall. Check it out. But the general gist is that throughout the U.S. Senate campaign, Abdul El Said highlighted his connections with his stepmother's family, including ads featuring his white grandparents. Jacqueline El Said married Mohammed El Said not long after El Said immigrated to the U.S. in the 1980s. So he's very quick to talk about his stepmother, but what about his biological mom? His biological mom is named Fatin Faithy El Komi. Hey, how many Fatins do you know, Vespa? Yeah, this is like the third I've talked about today. No, I'm kidding. Fatin Faithy El Komi, his mother, immigrated to the U.S. in the early 1980s, and she's largely been omitted in El Said's campaign videos. I wonder why. She was a nurse practitioner. Well, interesting. If El Said's a doctor, you think he'd want to talk about your mother who's a nurse. But there's a reason why he doesn't talk about her. It's because it turns out Fatin worked for the Islamic American Relief Agency, which was known as the Islamic African Relief Agency from 1999 through 2004. But in 2004, the U.S. Treasury Department designated it as a terror-supporting organization. This includes support for Osama bin Laden, the mastermind, obviously, behind 9/11. The group also supported al-Qaeda, Hamas, and the Taliban. So how many confirmations do we need that this guy is bad news? And he's hanging around Hassan Piker all the time. Hassan Piker, as we all know, said America deserved 9/11. He was asked about those comments recently, said he won't apologize for it. This guy's bad news. Bad news. Recent polling has Mike Rogers barely beating El Said. Some polls say the opposite, and we can't trust any of the polls.
But can't trust the polls right now.
Are you getting the sense, though, Vespa, that Democrats are kind of resigned to losing this seat? It doesn't seem like there's as much energy behind his campaign and Chuck Schumer's, you know, supporting him. It's almost like they're looking for alternatives in Iowa and Ohio, which just isn't going to happen, and even Texas. I feel like they're kind of resigned to the fact that Michigan might go red this year.
Yeah, he can't. I don't think he's going to be able to breach a lot of the stuff he needs to do. You know, Jews and blacks are the two largest minority groups in the state. They do not like him. Rural voters don't like him. So, you know, those are, I mean, especially, you know, Black to Jewish voters, those were historically cornerstones of the Democratic Party base. So, you know, it's basically two legs of the stool got just kicked out. So I don't think he'll be able to moderate, make more presentable, palatable, you know, what he has already said and done in the past.
Totally.
I mean, it'll come off as incredibly disingenuous. And not saying that that's like a, you know, a shocker, because all these guys are kind of, you know, a bunch of liars. But with Mr. Terrorist here, I don't really see a lot of
move.
I think it's not going to be like a blowout.
No.
So I think Rogers wins by 5 around there.
That would be a pretty hefty victory, and I hope that's the case.
Yeah. If you get 5% of Haley Stevens supporters to cross over, which by anecdotally, they seem to be, you know, geared towards do or very open to doing, mm-hmm. that gives them the margin to win.
Yeah. Yep.
So
let's make sure that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's make sure that happens. Hey, Vespa, let's leave it here this week. We'll probably do it again next week. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you all for joining us. Again, it's been episode 618. If you have any comments, please email us at triggered@townhall.com. And if you enjoy Triggered and want it uncensored, you can become a Town Hall VIP at townhallvip.com. You can use promo code FIGHT for 60% off your membership. Don't forget, 5-star ratings and reviews go a long way to helping us beat the big tech algorithm. And once again, that email is triggered@townhall.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll do it again next week.
See you then.